Ladies and gentlemen, please stay seated for the 5-star podcast on Three Red Kings. Introducing your host, the Eggman, the cult leader of the Secret Club, and the best in the world, Tom Savage.
It's the final countdown.
Thank you for joining me on this podcast. My name is Tom Savage. As that AI voice said, this podcast has been a tough one because there's so much to cover in this one. And there's so much to, I suppose, pour over. I've got a different podcast coming on the Antoine Frisch thing. I've been doing my best to talk to as many people in the know on this as possible so that when I actually do the podcast, it's information that's usable. First things first, Six Nations. Ireland lost to England 23-22 in Twickenham. The Grand Slam is off, but Six Nations is still on the table. If Ireland get a win next week of any colour against Scotland, Ireland will win the Six Nations. If Ireland lose without a bonus point against Scotland and England beat France with a bonus point, they win the Six Nations, which would be a bit of a turn up for the books. I think first and foremost, we'll just get on to the end game, which is where there's been a lot of questions, a lot of controversy about the ending to this game, about what Ireland should have done. In the last couple of games, or days rather, I've spoken to 5 coaches who are currently working in the professional game at the elite level. And I asked them, in that circumstance, working off a set piece that you have in your own 22, what do you do in that circumstance? And every single one of them said that before we even throw the line out in, the play will be get us set up for a kick that we can put into touch and put directly into touch. And that would be that. And the reason why they say to do that is at that stage in the game, 2 points up with 90 seconds left, you want to cheese the clock. You want to, and Ireland were a little bit unlucky in that Jack Conan had to go down injured. That killed a little bit of our time wasting. If that hadn't happened, we'd be looking at England throwing in with around 30 seconds left, which is a way more difficult thing to do than what they ultimately did. But all of them said that the logic is you don't want to try to run down the clock in your own 22 and then try and drive out of the 22, because then you've got no kicking options. Then if you kick it straight out in the full, it goes right back to where you kicked it from and the end result is the same. But the danger is that if you try carrying inside your own 22, and remember, ball has to be passed sideways or backwards in this game. So even though the lineup was taken near enough to the line of the 22, you'd have to pass the ball back to run shape, to run your structures. Ireland's structure at the start of that lineout was pre-called, as in, we're going to set up for a box kick where we can cheese time at the box kick itself, exit off the field, then get up there and make sure that they can't take the line out quickly. The clock would still be ticking. And at that stage, you look to try and defend the line out as best as possible. And with the idea being that with maybe 30 seconds left, England, you can force a mistake on first phase or second phase or whatever else. Now, that ultimately didn't happen, but that was the logic behind it. The logic that you should instead go through 5 or 6 phases deep in your 22, because bear in mind, you've got to throw that ball backwards to get away from the huge English defensive pressure that was coming. Which, by the way, we didn't win a fucking collision all day. So the idea that we would all of a sudden start doing that in the 78th minute is, I don't see it personally. So as you'll see in my Wally ratings, I thought Conor Murray had a bad game, but I'm not blaming him for box kicking. That was a pre-called move. That would likely even came down from the coach's box to do that, to make that play. So that in itself was fine. What happened afterwards, the line-out defence, first of all, it was a really good line-out scheme by England. They ran a 4-man line-out, which if you recall is what New Zealand scored their killer try against Ireland in the World Cup quarterfinal. It was a four-man line-out as well. England did the same here. I felt our line-out defence in that moment was a little bit cluttered, as in Keane Healy and Ryan Baird took each other out of the jump. Like, you want to get up there and make it obvious that Theo Dan had done a dummy throw, which he did. I mean, like, it should have been a free kick to Ireland, no, and there's no doubt about that. But look, that's just one of those things. You just have to get on with it. If Ryan Baird had gone up on that throw, then maybe you get your free kick and game over. But I think Keane Healy and Ryan Baird were looking to contest at the front, but there was really good line out defence by England, or a line out attack by England. Maro Itoje, the way that he fainted right up until the last minute on that lift at the front on, I think it was George Martin, and then pulled right back into a jump himself. Even watching it, knowing what's going to happen, you're like, he's lifting. But steps right back, gets a clean take. Ireland can't get somebody up. And like, this is the thing with four-man lineouts. All of the pressure goes on to the attack. The defence, because there's only two jumpers, right? You've got two lifters and two possible jumpers. So the combinations are, it's only going to be one or the other. With a four-man lineout as well, the spacing is so big, you can't do switches. So you can't have a cutout, for example, with, you know, you couldn't have George Martin cutting it out and then Will Stewart, you know, jogging right to the back of the lineout, for example. It has to be very, very short, right? So Maro Itoje stepped back. Martin went out of the way. Will Stewart had to move, what, 2-3 meters to be lifted in the, you know, to lift him in the middle. And they have their lineup ball then. Then it's a case of, can Ireland stop that movement? And the pass from Danny Kerr wasn't great, but if you look at that, the lineout structure with the blocker play and a second pass, which they did against Scotland off the scrum, all of a sudden they had a pocket to work with and they get over the gain line. Looking at it now, it's easy to say in hindsight, I'm not sure if I'm going for the choke tackle there. I think that helped England. But when they got that ball back, the ball came back really quick and we had a lot of guys off their feet as a result. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you get the choke tackle, brilliant. You've turned the ball over. You've the game won. But if you don't, you have three guys out of the defensive line straight away, which you would never do if it was a defensive breakdown. So when England got that ball back, they hit the corner. Bundiaki tried to cover around, what, 10 metres of space to get to Faye Waboso. Couldn't do it. And, like, the thing is, like, Waboso had all the power there. He was running a hard, straight line at pace. Bundiaki is tracking across, trying to make up ground from a side-on angle. Like, if that's a one-on-one tackle where Bundy is lined up right in front of Faye Waboso, I think Bundy stops him if it's in that channel. But because Bundy is coming from a side-on angle, it's almost impossible for him to stop it. You're only tackling with your arms, and Faye Waboso is a big, powerful runner, had a great game and got a huge gain. And I think that James Lowe, for example, will be disappointed with how he defended that piece, because I think he got a little bit excited about the idea of a mall turnover and kind of was in and around there to kill the ball, or to basically sell to the referee that we had the ball choked up. But that kind of took him out of position. And he ended up giving away the penalty, which gave them a free shot on the 5 metre line. And given the way their line out had gone, given the way that their maul had gone, I think they'd probably score anyway from that. So for Ireland, like, it was, the first phase was bad enough, but I think what really killed us was the choke tackle. When that didn't work, that was kind of all or nothing. And England had, when they went to the wide channel then, or to the short side, to Faye Waboso rather, they had all the advantages. And when we gave away that penalty, you know, fuck it, you're in trouble. Either way, like, they could have gone and kicked that and won anyway, but likely they would have gone to the corner on it or gone to the scrum. And from there, like, you would back England to convert in that circumstance. So, yeah, a lot of questions about that. My thoughts on it were, and the thoughts of the people I've spoken to, are The only option really was to kick it. And by kicking it to the 10-metre line, more or less, and kicking it deep, meant they couldn't go quickly. So it was about managing the clock as well as position and finding a kind of an intersection between the two. And it didn't work ultimately. But there's lots about this game that didn't work from an Irish perspective that I think that when we look back on it and when we look at just kind of assess this game, there was an awful lot similar to our narrow win over South Africa, which, I mean, realistically should have been a loss, which I know is like, I know it's like, you know, result wang, but like Scotland or South Africa left 12 points in the tee behind them in that game, which they didn't do at any other point in the tournament. So like after that, so I think if they have, what's his name? I almost said Mornay Steyn, but kind of the same thing on Andre Pollard, they probably win that game. But either way, we struggled to live with them physically for that game and got out of jail a few times. Against New Zealand, they were really physical in a way that I think shocked us a small bit. We were a little bit overawed by the occasion also. I think that's something as well that's true. But when I look at this game then against England, a number of people after the Wally ratings yesterday asked me, well, why is it different from France? Why do we do it to France? France had 7 forwards for 70 minutes of that game. They didn't make a change to bring on their 8 forwards, which meant that Ireland could have their way with them, really, on phase play, and did so. England, for the first time in 2 games over 2 years, I think it is, in the Six Nations, didn't get a player red carded against Ireland. They could have. I think Ellis Genge could have been given a red card, all right. But look, I think that England's plan coming in is something more or less what we were discussing in the Red Eye or the Green Eye and the Blood and Thunder podcast before the game, in that we know what they'll bring, which is they will kick the majority of their possessions. And for example, just a quick look at some of the kicking, right? Ireland kicked more than England, right? 28 kicks to 23. But we had 17 long kicks. They had 7. They had 16 short tactical kicks. They're box kicking. We had 11. The reason being this, that like that's their kicking style. They kick to contest. And if you can imagine a rugby pitch looking at you side on, they want to play from halfway between the 10-metre line and your 22. That's where they want to play phase play. And they will play phase play as well if they spot an opportunity on kick transition or if they turn over your set piece. And then that's how they play. And that conservatism, relatively speaking, was backed up by really intense defence on their part and incredibly efficient breakdown work from England, which was brutally physical. Now, they didn't have as much under 3 second rucks as what we did, but they really just, it didn't matter. Like, there's an idea that like that quick ruck ball determines everything, but like they were getting over the gain line a lot and we were struggling to put them down. And it seemed at times that our defence was a little bit like we were trying to run half a blitz at times, because there was a few occasions where Joe McCarthy seemed to have license to go shooting out of the line at George Ford in the same way that he caught Paolo Garbisi. But look, George Ford is a lot cuter than Paolo Garbisi when it comes to his positioning. And every single time that Joe McCarthy did that, every single time the ball was gone. And like little bits and pieces like that, where if we look at the South Africa game and we look at the New Zealand game and then look at this game, it feels that when we don't have clear physical superiority over the opposition, and against France, that was primarily due to their biggest, heaviest second row getting taken out of the game, well, taking himself out of the game rather, inside the first 20 minutes and then permanently. It makes it difficult for any team to live with this Irish team if they can't match them in that area, which is the same really for every team in every game. But for Ireland, we, even though we play quite big and we're listed as heavy as anybody, it still feels at times that when we come up against a team like that who are especially very, very physical at the offensive breakdown, it feels that we kind of shy back a little bit. And I'm not sure why that is, because obviously we're a good team, But watching this game back against England, I've watched it 5 times now, because I've just done my offensive ruck work as well. I'm looking at that game and I'm looking at how Ireland just approached it, and it felt always we were on the back foot. And like, we started the game well, right? As in the initial line-out position that we had, we did really well. We carried right up the guts, which is, we took away a lot of their blitz, which is, they want to blitz at the edge of the play to force you back in. We went right by the side of the ruck, and we just kept trucking and trucking and trucking and trucking up there until we got a penalty from England. And the thing is, in the first half, we went in ahead off the back of those penalty conversions that we had, 12 points, some really difficult kicks there as well. But we were kind of scrapping for those, you know? Like, I look at Ireland and you look at, we'll say, just from an offensive ruckwork perspective. Inside the first 10 minutes, in the last 3 games, Ireland have had a collective offensive ruckwork output of around 75 points on average. The margins are very small. It's been like 73, 78, 75, right? So kind of right bang in the middle of that would be the average from 75 collective offensive ruckwork points. That's basically the number of points people accrue from effective ruck entries, which means possession. Ireland didn't have a whole ton of possession in the first 10 minutes of this game, which is an aberration in itself, and it shows that England started the game really well, even though they'd be disappointed with how they managed that first sequence. But they did a really good job in making sure that the majority of what Ireland did, and if we look at the position here where Ireland played the majority of our rugby, we played, well, not the majority, but a little bit too much compared to what we normally do. 21% of the game was played in our own 22, on our possession. 22% of it was played in the 22 to the halfway line. That's a lot for Ireland. Only 38% of our play was in the halfway to of England's 22. And England, for example, in that same zone, had 49% of their possession in that, from the halfway line to R22. That's where they want to play. So if it felt like, geez, England played a lot more fucking rugby than, aren't they supposed to be a kicking team? They are a kicking team. But the majority of their possession, it happened to be in that 40, in that zone from the halfway to R22. And that's where they do their business. And predominantly inside that 10-metre line. And they only played 25% of the game in their half of the field. Right? Their half of the field. So we had 43% of the game in our half of the field. They had 25% in theirs. What does that tell you? Conservative kicking. They gave us nothing on transition. And as I said, watching that game back, the Scotland game, I felt that the big work on for them would be, we have to be cleverer and smarter on how we use our possession. We can't just run everything. We have to be really smart on what plays we run, what plays we kick. We can't just play sloppy like we did against Scotland and play from too far out. They really fixed that up this time. And you could tell, as I was saying in the podcast, if you're going to be a team who kicks, or in the article, if you kick as much as England do, and as much as England want to do with their possession, right? Because again, look, Ireland, like for the most part, are kicking less anyway. We kicked more than England here because we were under massive pressure, right? So like, from a possession perspective overall, like, we had 48% possession compared to 52, which isn't massive, right? That's not a massive difference. But like, England's use of their possession in their own half of the field was so conservative. But it worked. Like, they put a whole lot of pressure on our backfield. And to be fair, the 6-2 split straight away inside the first 5 minutes was a bust when Calvin Nash got injured tackling Tommy Freeman. Straight away you're under pressure, okay? Because then we had Kieran Frawley coming into the back line. We had to move Hugo Keenan out of fullback, which had a kind of a larger impact than maybe we would have liked. Because again, I think we saw one of the main strengths of Hugo Keenan is his speed, how quick he is in changing direction and adjusting. Which, to be fair, like, I mean, to expect Kieran Frawley to do that at the same level, it's unfair, because there's no way that he will. He's not a specialist fullback. He's like the very definition of a utility back who can, in theory, play those positions, but won't play to the same level as Hugo Keenan or any other specialist fullback, I would say. So when you look at like how we approached the initial part of the game, straight away our bench rotation was under pressure, but the key was the forwards, right? So we ended up losing Kieran Frawley later in the game anyway, which brought on Conor Murray, moved Jemison Gibson-Park, which again, look, we would have schemed for that. That's something that you have to live with if you're going to go with a 6-2 split. I think it'll be a while before we'll see it again, personally. Although, we could see it this weekend, who knows. But that's the risk with them. And we came up short on that straight away. Because I think at Gibson-Park, I think he probably would have seen 70 minutes here, maybe a bit more. Conor Murray at this stage is playing poorly. I can't remember the last time I saw him playing really well. And look, like I said, I keep having to qualify in that he's one of the best players that we've ever produced, but ever. Like, and he's one of the top five all-time scrum halves in the world ever, in my opinion. But, you know, he's not really at the pitch of this type of game anymore. And that was my opinion watching it back five times. And it's not, again, like Conor Murray he's been taking a ton of pelters all weekend. I don't give a shit about the kick at the end. That was the right call. But it's the quality of passing, the pace around the field, the accuracy of it. We had a really good opportunity inside the English 22, just a bad pass to Bundy. And that can't be. So that seems to be a thing where Farrell is incredibly loyal to Conor Murray, as he is to a couple of other guys as well. And I'm not sure if that worked out for him this weekend. Not a great game for Conor at all, in my opinion. Gibson-Park, I thought, played really well. People ask him why he didn't give himself and Crowley 4 stars. I thought that Aki was the best player on the field for Ireland, but it wasn't a 5-star performance from him. So by definition then, Gibson-Park and Crowley would be 3 stars each. I thought they played well, to be fair. But Bundy Aki was the best player in the field for Ireland. I think the biggest issue was against Wales, for example. Ireland controlled the platform. So Wales didn't have any vehicle to... They didn't have any platform to launch any kicks that would have been part of their scheme coming into the game. They didn't play the game they wanted to because they had no platform to do so. Ireland were the same in this game in that we didn't have the platform that we typically do. And we're talking now about the lineout. Ireland have been under pressure in games before against teams who started really well and who kicked really conservatively. We, at the moment, seem to be transiting to an on-ball style, looking at the first 3 games of the tournament, where we were kicking much less and playing a lot more phase play. That didn't work in this game, in part because we were losing more collisions in the middle of the field than we could afford. And the fact as well that, look, the edge blitz was putting us under pressure. Now, we did create some opportunities on it, and we scored 2 tries. Like, you know, the box kick, the take by Hugo Keane, and then the execution from Jack Crowley with that double pump to put away Caelan Doris for the, you know, ultimately what would be the try that we would, the lead we take into the last couple of minutes. But, no, actually, that was a different one, rather. Sorry. That built our lead at the early part of the second half. It just felt that we had no platform to play. And a lot of people's reaction to that seems to be, oh, we needed to kick the ball more. Well, look, if we're going to play 1 week against Italy and another week then against Wales, we're going to play with a lot of possession against them. And we're going to have a high pass per carry ratio against them. But then 2 weeks later, we come up against England. We decide to change tack altogether. And here we kicked way more. Like our kick to pass ratio was 1 kick to every 4.3 passes, which is, again, that's coming up on off-ball rugby, close enough to it. I think that we were under big pressure from England. And if you look at the length of our kicks, we had 17 long kicks in this game, mostly from James Lowe and Gibson Park. It felt that we were trying to keep England at arm's length because we felt that if we could meet them on defensive transition from when they're attacking now and we're defending, that we could pin them in their half of the field where they don't have a phase play game, right? That's what our read on it was. They don't play rugby back there. So if we kick long into their half of the field or kick, you know, long from wherever our ruck is and meet them on that gain line, on transition, we'll keep them, like, they won't have anything to play with. They'll just be kicking and kicking and kicking. The crowd will get on their back. We'll mop up. Ireland would back themselves. We will mop up those kicks that they'll throw at us. And we'll just keep moving that ball downfield. And they don't play those balls. So what'll they do? They'll kick it out for the line-out. And what'll happen then? We will run our line-out strike plays. We will advance up the field. We will score tries. And we will win this game. That's what I think Ireland's approach was in this game. I think that's what our idea of how we would beat this English team, which is they will give us lineouts if we kick deep and long. And the problem was, though, is that our defensive transition wasn't good enough. We didn't beat them as quickly on the gain line as we should. We left too many gaps. And plus, as well, they got their selection right in their back three. A lot of people asking about Freddie Stewart, I saw before the game. This is the answer as to why he's not there. He's a little bit too slow to be a winger in this system for England. He is, without doubt, a superb player under the high ball. But just because England kicked the ball a lot doesn't mean you have to select your back three based on what they do under the ball. Like, he's not as quick, he's not as creative, he's not as agile or as explosive as George Furbank. George Furbank gives them the offensive transition that you need to run a kicking game at the volume that they play at. And when Ireland kicked long, repeatedly, to England, we were surprised by the quality and the pace of their offensive transition. But as I wrote in the Green Eye, that's all they've been working on. Like, in the last 2 weeks, they would have transitioned their work from defensive work primarily to being kick management, which is how we go from offensive transition to offensive phase play to defensive transition, or to go from a defensive line into offensive transition. How do we go about doing that? If you're going to kick at the volume that they do, you have to have that part of your game. In George Furbank and Faye Wabosso, they have the guys you need to make that work. As in, a really quick, creative fullback who can advance across the field on transition and open up space for you. And then in Faye Wabosso and Tommy Freeman, you have two powerful fellas who will run in a straight line and who will advance up the edges for you. And once you get to the point where you play rugby, you start running your hard lines. And again, we look at the passes that they had, the majority were shorter, right? So they were hitting off nine. They were at pace. They were playing really quick as well. When they're running at that pace and they've got the clean-out unit right there on the scene, we had no means to get at their ball at the breakdown. So if it felt that Ireland are kicking the ball an awful lot, we're not getting it back, and it feels that every time we kick the ball to them, they're just surging back at us. That's how it happened, in that our defensive transition will be the big disappointing factor in this game for us. But the thing is, that's baked into our game now, right? In the last two games, we kicked way less than our opponent, right? So when we did kick long, it wasn't on, like, it was basically on our terms. But we were able to deal with the opposition because their offensive transition work, it's not great, right? They don't have the players there yet. England do have the players there, which is a creative guy at fullback, and then just strike runners. Ollie Lawrence, Faye Wabosso, even Henry Slade to a certain extent. Like, they all showed up on the wing. Well, Lawrence did, showed up on the wing in those sequences where, again, a big, powerful fella running a straight line down a tram line will always win a collision against any fella coming side on. Without question. I mean, 19 times out of 20. One time out of 20, the guy manages to, the defender manages to push him into touch. But if they're coming from a straight up angle, it won't work. And I think that's part of the reason why it felt that way, is because we had no solid launch point to get at, right? So we had nothing where we could stem the flow of that sequence of play by entering into our own preferred sequence of play, which is post line-out phase play. We didn't have that here. And, like, it's no surprise that England brought our line-out below, but 85% is what it was. It has to be higher than that against this team. Now, we had 60% return on the scrum off five scrums. That's not great either, but the line-out was the biggest issue. The scrum didn't cost us the game. The line-out was a big factor, though. We were missing line-out throws to the front. Like, all Six Nations, Dan Sheehan's throwing has been superb. Superb. Except for here. For whatever reason. His spin efficiency was way down. You could see that during the game. Normally with Dan Sheehan, like he never throws those, you know, those tall throws where the ball isn't going straight. It kind of angles up where the nose of the ball is pointed towards the sky. Rarely you see that from Dan Sheehan. So it happened twice in this game. Now, England contested an awful lot at the lineout, which Wales didn't really do. France didn't really do, mainly because of the guys they had off the field. And Italy didn't do it. They wanted to defend Ireland on maul and in face play. But England did a really good job of putting up a counter unit on almost every throw. And it got in our heads. It definitely got in our heads. If we just look at the lineout, just some of the detail on that lineout. So we had, Dan Sheehan had 9 lineouts. The average distance thrown was 6 meters. Before this, it was 8 meters. So straight away, Ireland are playing narrower. Ireland are trying to compress our line out into smaller space. So like that average distance thrown means that he's throwing to the front on like 1 meter from the fucking 5 meter tram line. Like that's so conservative. Like we have no launch point with that. Like Dan Sheehan threw 0% of his throws to the middle. None to the middle. 8 to the front, 89% of his throws went to the middle, and then 1 went to the back, and that got turned over. That shows the pressure that England were under. And look at England. Theo Dan and Jamie George, their average throw length was 7.7 metres. Jamie George was 7.3. So England straight away were able to play with a little bit more expansivity. Like, so for example, Jamie George, 64% of his throws, his 11 line-out throws, went to the front. If his average was 7.3, that means that he had 27% to the back successfully. And Dan Sheehan's spin average spiral efficiency, right, is around 97% normally. In this game, it was 92.8. So something's happening there. That is not what we expect from Dan Sheehan normally at all. Roland Kelleher had a much better game at the lineout than Dan Sheehan did in this one. He hit the middle twice. His average distance in the lineout was 9.3 metres. Spin efficiency, 96.8. But that'll just give you an idea of, were we a bit rattled here? Were we under pressure? Did the start England had, the physicality that they were playing with, did that take us out of the game a little bit? Maybe. Maybe it did. But like, when you add that to the passing, right? Like Alex Mitchell, his average passing distance was 8.2 metres. Danny Carey's was 7.5. So when we look at how that tallies with the amount of passing that he was doing, he was hitting his pods of 9, or pods of 3 off 9, around 8 metres away, which is really good and very hard for us to defend efficiently, and we didn't. If you look at James Gibson Park, he had 33 passes, Alex Mitchell had 59 passes, which will just give you how much ball and how much possession England had here. Gibson Park only managed to pass 7.5 metres on average, which again is lower than what we expect from the Irish scrum half. Typically has to pass longer than that. But our attacking work was compressed. We were under pressure, and when you're under pressure, stuff doesn't work as normally as, or doesn't work as smoothly maybe as it typically does. And that's kind of like all those things there, like Dan Sheehan's spin efficiency at the throw not being what it normally is. Ireland being 89% at the front and still only having what? 85% completion from 13 lineouts. That's not good. Like That's back at the kind of thing that we're talking about against South Africa and against New Zealand, where they got at our line out, and as a result, everything looked ridiculously shaky. But you can just tell there was moments here where we had big relieving penalties, for example, that got us up to the halfway line, where typically Ireland have launched off the line out there, really good line out play, all of a sudden they're up into the opposition 22, and
Ireland usually convert those opportunities. But England got their hands on a few of those, a few of those lineouts. And the thing is, 85% is how many we completed, right? As in where we retained possession. But there was lots of those where they were really scrappy and not great ball to work with, because ultimately you're throwing it to the front and you're looking for your scrum half then to add a little bit of value to the distance that you haven't gotten off the lineout. And as a result, everything's that little bit more narrow. And England love narrow. Like, they love narrow defence. Like, defensively, like, as in we got pieced up here. Like, realistically, we lost a physical battle here consistently. Because just looking at some of the, like, the tackle stats and stuff, which again, look, they don't really tell you a whole lot, really, so I'll ignore them. But from a set piece perspective, like, Ireland losing the lineouts that we did, we can't live with that. That's not like losing two lineouts and kind of scrappy lineouts at that, then afterwards, that hurts you in a game like this, because it takes away the platform that you normally have to play with. Like, two lineouts doesn't sound like a lot, but when England are playing and our primary sequence is kicking long to them and them attacking on transition way better than we expected, while we're defending the transition way worse than expected, you need those. And like, it's the ones you really want that you don't get are the ones that hurt you. So that's a key part of why this game got away from us, I feel, and that physical battle being lost. There's gotta be questions over that. You know? Like, I mean, look, every team loses, but we've kind of lost now and had these performances a few times against big physical teams. And it feels that everybody now should be aware that if you get at Ireland's lineout and throw two pods in the air and make Ireland play conservative, you take away a lot of what works for this Irish team since the World Cup. And England showed that here, where all it takes is two lineouts out of 13, and of the 11 that they get, they're scrappy and they can't really launch off. All of a sudden, Ireland look like a reduced force. And still, we should have won. We were 2 points up coming into the last 10 minutes. Ireland would back themselves to win that from that position 9 times out of 10. Like, people were going about, like, oh, Jack Crowley should have made those conversions. There was a swirling wind in Twickenham, first of all. But even then, they're difficult conversions out on the touchline, which, again, look, some of those are 60-percenters. And, look, Jack Crowley, I think his work off the tee was pretty good on the whole, but the two conversions you miss off the tee, they're the ones that come back to haunt you, because that's 4 points. You lose by 1 point. Everybody all of a sudden gets their fucking abacus and their calculators out. But, I mean, that's just the way it is for a fly half. They take the shit for stuff like that when they're goal kicking. But overall, I think that Jack Crowley had a great game. So did Jameson Gibson-Park. Just running through my ratings here now. Tadhg Byrne had a good game. His work at the defensive breakdown was very good. He gave away that penalty right at the end, but look, at that stage, you were basically picking your poison. Bundy Aki was the top player for me. 4-star performance, won a ton of collisions, was a great outball for us. Playing the best rugby of his career at the moment, I would say, without question. Robbie Henshaw had a decent game as well. Not massively up or down. I gave him a 3-star performance, same with Hugo Keenan. James Law gave a 2-star performance. He kicked the ball a lot. It wasn't to his normal standard. And he scored 2 tries, which is great. But it was at the end of passing sequences where you would hope any test level winger you would give that ball to would score a try in that circumstance. Positioning defensively was a little bit off as well. But again, look, that's an aberration. He's been really good in that area of the game for a good number of years now. But the amount of transition that England had, I think, exposed a small bit about his game with regards to his covering of space at pace. But yeah, look, he's still a vital player in the team, obviously. Pack was mainly where the game was lost, I think. I gave Conor Murray 1-star off the bench. Thought he was really poor. Kieran Frawley, I gave 2 stars. To be fair, he did get a concussion right before the English transition attack that they got, where he was defending near the ruck when he should have been in the backfield. But, you know, that is what it is. Connor, I thought, had a really poor game by his standards. Just the pass quality, running into passing lanes for line breaks, like, nah. Ryan Baird and Jack Conan, I thought, underperformed a small bit off the bench. Didn't really stop the tide of English physicality at all. Jack Conan was unlucky. He kind of got hurt in that last play, which I thought took him out of it a small bit from the play that came after. Henderson, I thought, did well. I gave him 3 stars off the bench. Took some good line out, carried some good ball. Finley Beelam, thought, was a little bit weak at times. There was one moment I saw him which kind of coloured my opinion of it, where Ben Earl just kind of lightly kind of bumps him in the back and he falling all over the place. I just don't like to see your props off the bench working that way. And look, it's not about Ollie Yeager. Like, I don't think Tom O'Toole would have done that either. But whatever. Keane Healy, decent game off the bench. Ronan Kelleher, very good actually. Thought he was really, really sound. Sound? Nice guy, Ronan Kelleher. His throwing was sound. His overall game was actually really good. If you're going on whoever starts out of those two is whoever played the best in the last couple of games, I would say Ronan Kelleher, based on this game, probably should start next one. Andrew Porter, I gave him 3 stars. Scrummaged quite well for the most part. Won a few turnovers. Vital player for Ireland, just keeping our physicality levels up. Dan Sheehan and Tadhg Furlong, I gave 2 stars. Furlong looked a little bit caught for pace on those longer transitions, which, again, like, kicking long like that at the volume we did, I don't think it suits Tadhg Furlong at this day and age. Dan Sheehan, line out throwing wasn't at his usual standard. We needed him as well, like, showing up in offensive collisions, didn't really do that either. So yeah, I gave him 2 stars. Omani, I thought, looked poor by the standards you'd expect from both him and as captain. I was looking at his offensive ruck work. Again, a little bit more inefficiency there than what I would like. But again, it's like, because he's not playing as an edge forward in this system either. Like, Ireland are playing, from a forward's perspective, a lot narrower. So there's not really a traditional edge forward in, we'll say, Munster's 1-3-3-1 or 3-3-X, whatever you call it. So it's not that he's standing out on the edge waiting for the ball to come in, because that's what the role says. He's a little bit closer to the action in this Irish system. And I just felt didn't have an impact. And for the line out as well, just felt some of the explosivity on counter jump and on line out Ireland's throws, and that, like, a lot of that comes down to the lifting as well, just not what it would normally be. So I gave him a 2-star performance. Josh van der Fleer, showing up everywhere. His ruck work was really good for the time he was in the field. I felt that when he went off the field, I thought we lost something. He looked back to what we expect from Josh van der Fleer, and I've rated him up and down over the last couple of months, but he was really good here. He got 3 stars from me, but only because he went off the field early. If he'd stayed on for the full 80 minutes, I'd imagine that he would have the full, maybe a 4-star. But again, you can just see at the end the importance of small forwards, because England have shown they had their small forwards on for the entire game. Ben Ireland, Sam Underhill. And they went big at 4, 5 and 6 and balanced that with 2 small forward build players at 7 and 8. And it worked for them. They covered a lot of ground. I think that if you're going to play those games, I think that in that last sequence from Ireland, for example, we wanted to bring another line out forward for Peter O'Mahony. But I think we lost a bit of coverage in midfield off the back by not having Josh van der Fleer there, or a small forward build player. So that'll be an interesting one for this, the big build that Ireland are using off the bench now. And the reason why we're going for that 6-2 split, it didn't have the impact we needed it here, I don't think. So that's something I think we look at going forward. Maybe we'll go back to a 5-3 for next week. I feel we will, but we'll wait and see. Caelan Doris as well, I gave a 2-star performance because, again, look, he wasn't at the normal levels we associate with Caelan Doris. Got a little bit quiet in the game as well. A lot of the carries that he did have, for me, were passive. They weren't... They weren't the sort of offensive, like, game breakers that we needed. And it felt that, and this, I felt this way all the way through, that this Irish team, we needed guys who could get over the game line for us and compress defenders. And we tried to do that. But our biggest ball carrier in the pack didn't get on the ball. Like, it was frustrating to me, because I'm looking at, like, Joe McCarthy, I gave a one-star performance. And I've already people asking me, why did I give him a one-star performance? Was he that bad? I started off from a default position that everybody in the pack was a two-star performance, right? Just because we lost the game, and we, it looked from the, like, just looking at us, watching the game, it felt that we got beaten up in the pack. So I started everybody off on two stars. So then when I'm watching the game back doing this review, I'm adding bits and pieces or taking them away based on what I see happening in the game. So for Tadhg Byrne, I saw that really important breakdown steal on Ireland's try line in the first half. I saw some good defensive tracking. Like, I've seen people blaming him for England's first transition try because he didn't fold. Lads, if he folds, Alex Mitchell, I remember he's there, he's trying to fold as soon as a ruck is finished when he knows where the ball is going. If he starts folding before that ruck is complete, Alex Mitchell, whose his stock in trade is sniping around the breakdown, is gone through the massive gap that you could reverse a Kia Sportage through in from where that ruck was to where Tadhg Furlong was, because we didn't cover across the field well enough. George Furbank beat our transition across. Our transition defense was late coming because we got our kick management wrong, where we had no chaser on the blind side. So we had to wait for Hugo Keenan to put everybody on side. So everybody was starting from, we'll say, a second or two down, and then they just couldn't fill the space. So if Tadhg Byrne doesn't move, like, if he follows that, if he falls across before that ball is gone, Alex Mitchell is running up the middle of the field and scoring under the posts. So, like, that to me, it was just like, that's kind of daft criticism of, well, you're just looking at, well, what's there with the ruck? Who should have folded? Well, who's the pillar? Well, it should have been Tadhg Byrne. If he had done that, Tadhg Furlong and Joe McCarthy had not covered the space. They were really lagging behind. And when I watched on the number of times Ireland kicked, how many times on transition was Joe McCarthy lagging behind? He wasn't getting up in time to get to that to the spaces we needed him to. And then you look at the number of times he jumped out of the line to tackle and try and put a big hero shot on George Ford and missed the ball. Three times that I counted. It actually could be four, but it's at least three. And straight away then you're kind of going, well, now we need him showing up on the ball. Now he had a good, he had some decent offensive ruck work entries. But Joe McCarthy's big thing is that he's big Joe McCarthy. He's the guy who's going to be carrying the ball for us. And he just didn't get on ball. And I'm like, everybody starts at two, right? So Peter O'Mahony stayed at two. Caelan Dorris stayed at two, as did Sheehan and Furlong. Porter went up because I saw some good defensive involvements from him. Van der Fleer went up and would have gone longer if he was on the field longer. But then I'm looking at Joe McCarthy, and all I'm seeing is not in place on transition, slow up off the ground. Passive when it comes to our offensive sequences that we have. Where, like, why is he not getting on the ball? Why is he putting himself, why is he at inside barrel? Like, there was a moment there in the, coming up on the, it was in the first half. We were attacking into, from right side to left. So yeah, it was first half. Where we were trucking it up. And we needed, like, there was an opportunity here to really punch holes in the middle. And I'm seeing Joe McCarthy lining up as the inside barrel. I'm like, this guy is supposed to be our gain line winner. He's supposed to be fucking firing us over the gain line. What's he doing there? They hit Caelan Dorris on the outside. Gibson Park hits Caelan Dorris. So the poor enough pass, he has to spin around on the outside. But there was just a number of times I was looking for Joe McCarthy versus Marouane Itoje. Joe McCarthy versus Ollie Chesham. Joe McCarthy versus George Martin. And the rest of the Beatles. And it rarely happened. We didn't see those. And when you combine that with the transition stuff, and then right at the end, he got stuffed on a close range carry that we were trying to get out of our 5 meter line. He got stuffed back by like 2 meters, whatever it was. And I just felt that not a great game from him. And again, like, I'm not rating Joe McCarthy on big Joe McCarthy the media construct. the hype construct. He's a very good young player. He actually is a very good young player. He is raw though. And he's improved bits and pieces of his game as he's gone through the Six Nations. But in this game, when we were under pressure and we needed some gain line, didn't show up. And like, maybe the situation, like the actual game, the scale of it, the pressure got to him to a certain extent, which happens. But yeah, I was a bit disappointed because I was looking coming into this game where Joe McCarthy, Mario Itoje, that's going to be the fucking matchup now. There was no matchup. Didn't happen. And when you look at the transition stuff and being a bit out of position and then the shooting out on George Ford and missing the ball completely, that just happened too many times. That's why he dropped down to a one from the two that it started with. But like, it doesn't change that he's still a vital player for Ireland. We just need to use him that way. Like, I suppose most of my criticism there could be Gibson Park. Find him. Find him. If it's a case that he's not lining up in the pods, leaders in that team need to be coming over to him going, get on the fucking ball. And I think that's like, because he's a young player. Like, you'll often see this with guys who are coming in who are a little bit nervous in a game and finding that the occasion is overawing them a small bit. Where they work to the inside barrel and it's like, well, you're doing your job, you're out there, you're hitting a ruck. But if you're there, you're like the ball carrier. Like, you've got to, like, he's our primary power forward in that pack. But we didn't use him. So, like, it looked like we were getting powdered in contact because our biggest guy is kind of taking inside barrel. Like, that to me was a disappointment. And I think, like, against Scotland now, he'll start and should start. But we'll see him getting on ball and fucking committing guys. Hitting the line at pace. It's like, it's fine, like, to be the fella who's doing it inside the opposition 22 when the try line is, you know, 6 meters away. That's fine. But we need a fella showing up as well in the middle of the field because that's where our possession was. Like, we need you to fucking hit the line for us here and impose yourself. Didn't see enough of it. So hopefully we get to see a little bit more of that against Scotland, and I'm sure that we will. But yeah, overall, just a poor enough performance. England's performance, really, really good. Everything that they would have wanted to work in this game worked perfectly, worked exactly as they would have wanted. So in that situation, you're kind of going, well, like, we've got to play our best game, and it felt that the tactical approach that we took, it leaned right into what England had worked on. And look, it's not the end of the world. This team has not become a bad team overnight. Playing Scotland this coming weekend, you would expect Ireland to win that game at home against the Scottish team we've beaten consistently since, what, 2017? So, look, the pressure's on. Scotland will be looking for a triple crown. They'll be looking to try and throw out the bad vibes they had from losing to Italy. But, yeah, look, for me, like, winning a Six Nations is a good return. But I do feel that if we're going to commit to a style for 2 weeks, well, come up on 3 weeks before this game, and then change up, we do need to look at the build of this team. We need to look at some of the profiles and role sets that we're using, and are we getting the best value out of the structure that we're in, the shape we're using, the intent we're trying to play with, and then the roles that we have on the field. Do we need to make an adjustment there? I'll be back with more podcasts and more articles later in the week. I will be in Cork today. I will be looking at the Prez versus CBC Munster Senior Schools Cup final, sponsored by Pinergy. And I will have a little report from that game as well. So thank you very much for joining. Thank you very much for being a TRK subscriber. I will talk to you again very, very soon.